Here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. Glad to have you with us today. I am Packer Dave, and on this edition of the Sports Report, Dion Miller from ABC TV 7 will join us talking about the Bears, the Cubs, the Sox, all things Chicago in that segment. We'll also be joined by Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. He covers the Bears for us at Hallis Hall throughout the year. Adam Lucas, who covers the Tar Heels in North Carolina, will join us talking college basketball later in the program, as will Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Network talking NBA. But let's look at NFL free agency right now, and that picks up next week. For Green Bay, Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews are both free agents, and I'm hoping they can hold on to Cobb. He might not command that much in the marketplace because his performance in the last couple of years hasn't been as good as earlier in his career. However, he has been able to make big plays. He's had a lot of injuries, so that accounts for some of the slow production. And the rise of Devontae Adams is going to cut his numbers down. I think he has a good place on the team and hope they can somehow find a way to keep him. Maybe he'd like to stay in Green Bay and close out his career there. Who knows? Clay Matthews, I don't know. I would think that he might be fine with going somewhere else. He's kind of a glitz guy, might not mind Miami or L.A. or, you know, New York, some of these big markets where he can market himself. And he's still, you know, last year, it only showed that he had 3.5 sacks. But if you remember the first 3 weeks, he had a sack each week that penalties were called on for roughing the passer, which with these calls, if they were done the year before this new rule was installed, those would have been sacks. So a lot of people thought that those should have been sacks anyways, and he got robbed. Anyway, also in free agency, so I don't think the Packers are going to be able to keep him. And I don't think he probably would want to stay. He might want a new chapter. We'll see. The Antonio Brown situation looks like he may be traded any day now, and the Raiders are the front runners. The Steelers want to move him before having to pay a roster bonus of $2.5 million on March 17th. And March 17th is St. Patrick's Day, and my band in Niagara Falls, the Niagara Trophy Husbands, will be performing that day. So that's exactly. Thank you very much. I hope you all can come to the event. It should be a good time. All your classic rock favorites there. 5 to 9 on St. Patrick's Day, Chippewa House in Chippewa. Also, Mike McCarthy, he's sitting out the 2019 season. He was looking to get the Jets job this year, but that went to Adam Gase, so he's going to sit out 2019 and gear up for 2020. However, in the interim, he's taken a one-year contract with Green Bay Tire and Automotive Center to portray the Michelin Man at weekend promotions. So, there we go.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
so
and
good.
Now I'm going to discuss a little bit, and we have the audio in the background of the situation that happened in Florida. Robert Kraft, he goes in, and 2 days in a row, right before the AFC Championship in KC, has himself an episode at an Asian massage parlor. A little bit of audio in the background there, and
don't move. I'll go get you a towel.
Okay, it sounds a lot like Donald Duck there, but that's some of the audio. We'll see where all that winds up. Quite an interesting situation. Okay, Dion Miller from ABC TV 7 coming back after this. You are listening to the Sports Report.
Hi, this is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to try the new streaming radio app from Internet FM. It features 24 online radio stations playing nothing but rock and roll. No annoying pop-up ads, little or no commercial breaks, and best of all, no sign-up required. Simply download Internet FM from the Apple Store or Google Play, and it's ready to go. Just pick your favorite station and assign it to any of the 18 programmable buttons. That's the new Internet FM app on Apple or Google Play. Download it today.
Hey, Packer Dave, it's Pat Hughes of the Chicago Cubs. I was listening to an old Rod Stewart CD the other day, and for some reason, his lines reminded me of you when he said, "His body stunk, but he kept his funk." Nice talking to you, Packer Dave.
His body stunk, but he kept his funk. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Thank you, Pat Hughes. I'm Packer Dave. This is the Sports Report. And now we bring in from Chicago, Steve Leventhal. Steve, how are you today?
Oh, this is great. It's our monthly time, you know, our show. I love it. You know, let's talk baseball, football, this stuff, except for NFL. No, we'll do some NFL, I'm sure.
Well, Steve covers the Bears at Hallis Hall throughout the season and all different kinds of Chicago sports, Northwestern, the Bulls, all kinds of things. But when he goes out to these endeavors, he, of course, mingles with the rest of the press in the Chicago area. And one person that he's forged a relationship with, and now she comes on our program pretty frequently, is Dion Miller from ABC TV 7 in Chicago. Dion, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Okay. Are you a Rod Stewart fan?
No.
You could say no.
I'm not a hater. I'm just not a fan.
Okay. Come on. What's not to like? He's a crooner. He used to be in Faces.
A couple songs. I can take a couple songs.
Mandolin Wind, Gasoline Alley, Cut on Shorty.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. All right,
Is
Dion.
Is that all you guys wanted?
Sounds like it, doesn't it? So before we get into Cubs and Sox, because you were out at spring training, and I'm sure that was a lot of fun. I'm about to head out there in about a week and a half. But the Packers have had two bad years in a row. The Bears have had a real nice year last year with their new coach, Matt Nagy. So are you going to hassle me the way I've hassled you about having to cover the Bears over the last couple of years? I don't think you will, because you seem like a much nicer person than I.
Well, don't put it past me. No, I'm not. I'm not at all, because every team goes through ebbs and flows, and there is absolutely no guarantee that the Bears will be able to recreate what they had last year in this coming year. Now, granted, not a lot is changing for our Bears. The only thing they really need is a quality kicker. We're still waiting for that to happen, but otherwise, they do return pretty much everybody. Now they know the system. They know what to expect. A new defensive coordinator in Chuck Pagano. But I really think that's going to be a really smooth transition for them because of the veteran leadership they have. And, I mean, Khalil Mack, there's just like two words that will always be the trump card when it comes to defense if they can stay healthy. And then offensively, I think we saw Mitch Trubisky really, really grow this year. And it gives you reason to be excited about what he can do now that he knows the offense so well. And Nagy said at the combine, he's like, once we get the language down, now we can really go play ball. And I feel like last year they never really felt like they had a full understanding of the offense. Now that's going to come. Like, there's reason to be excited. But I think that, you know, across the board, the division's going to be really good, much improved. I can't fathom the Packers having another season that's going to be bad and frustrating.
Why not? Why not?
You never know.
Well, I want to get on to Cody Parkey a little bit. I want to get on to Cody Parkey a little bit. Well, why can't the Packers have another bad year? Now, I don't like ebbs and flows. I wish we didn't have them. I wish the Packers were good all the time. But I don't see why they couldn't have another bad year. It wasn't like Rodgers was injured. You know, he had a little hobbly knee the first few weeks, but their defense still isn't where it needs to be. I wouldn't be surprised if they had a subpar season. I hope they don't, but I think they're riding on their reputation a little bit, don't you?
Oh, for sure. And probably that's why I would say that, because it's just so abnormal for them to struggle in ways we've seen teams like the Bears do. And I just don't see that consistently happening for them, but perhaps I'm wrong. I mean, I don't know. It's definitely March. So this is just what I'm seeing from my point of view right now.
I'm old, Dion. I watched the Packers throughout the 70s and the 80s. I think they had one playoff berth in the 70s.
Playoff?
Yeah, one game against the Redskins. And then in the 80s, they went and beat the Cardinals 1 year and then lost to the Cowboys in the subsequent game. And that was it. So in a 20-some year period of time, till Favre came, they were bad. So it can happen. And that was right after the Lombardi era. So anyway, Cody Parkey is gone. Does it make a difference to you or Bears fans, the fact that the NFL determined that that kick at the end of the game against the Eagles was partially touched, blocked, whatever you want to call it? Does that make a difference?
No.
Why not?
No, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference to me because he stepped up there and nailed the one that we all knew that he was going to be iced for. Like, you just knew that they were going to call timeout. Everybody knew it. He kicked it anyway. And as soon as he hit it, I was like, he's going to miss. It was a mental thing all year. If he had missed all year and it had just happened in this moment, then I would give the caveat, like, okay, it was tipped. It's a little abnormal. But it wasn't abnormal. What was normal was that he was missing kicks and he was hitting the uprights. That was his pattern. It's performance-based is why he was like, oh, I'm stunned they waited as long as they did to make that news official. But, you know, he can't continue to be there if he can't deliver in moments. And he didn't. And, you know, a lot of Bears fans that I've talked to felt like he makes that kick, they're playing for the Super Bowl. And they believed it, too. They believed it, too. I think the look on Nagy's face and Trubisky's face and Akeem Hicks, I never forget it. I mean, it was just that moment that they couldn't believe what they just saw, but gosh, we saw Parkey do that all season. And so, no, it does not make a difference to me that it was tipped in the least.
See, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say it's all on Parkey, but at the same time, he got put in a position that you wouldn't want to have to be in, that you have to make the kick, you know, to stay in the game. So, you know, some of that should really fall on the rest of the team. Anyways, Dave, on Wednesday,
that's why he makes the big bucks.
The Bears signed a kicker, Chris Blewett from Pittsburgh.
Blewett.
Well, that's a bad name to start with.
Kind of like what you just did with his name, Steve.
Blewett. Yes.
Okay. I like the preparation you put into this show, Steve. You know, I was for a while there encouraged by the news alert you came up with, though. Chris Blewett.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
That's a bad name for a kicker.
Awful. And zero NFL experience to go with the other kicker they signed, Redford something. That no NFL experience at this point. I'm not sure what they're doing. They said that sometimes guys like Robbie Gould come out of nowhere. I mean, when the Bears originally signed Robbie Gould, he had no NFL experience, and now, you know, among the most accurate kickers ever. So they're throwing stuff out there. They're grabbing somebody who stands out to them and hoping for the best. I think that's all they can do right now. Now, how that unfolds once they get more into free agency and the draft and where they move and trades they might do and things that might change, who knows? But this is where they sit right now, still in desperate need of that kicker.
And they have no first and no second round draft picks. So
no second round draft pick, right. Which could, of course, change because as we've seen over the last four seasons, Ryan Pace has definitely earned the trust of Bears fans to make moves on draft day or in and around the draft to better position the Bears. That has happened consistently. It took, what, three drafts for him to stay pat on his first round pick? And then even after that, he went again and traded up just to get Trubisky. So he's not afraid to make moves. I think he's proven that. And if he sees that he can better the Bears by doing it, he will. And I think that we just have to stand by and watch. But that's what makes the offseason fun, right?
Okay. Deion Miller with us from ABC TV 7 in Chicago. Now let's move on to baseball. And you went to catch Cactus League action in Arizona and just recently returned from that. You saw the Cubs and the Sox. They both play their games down there in the preseason. So your impressions from your visit and your coverage?
You know, it's honestly, it's one of the first times that I have felt like both teams had a chip on their shoulder. I feel like the Sox always report with this, like, we know we have something to prove kind of attitude, but the Cubs really showed up that way. All of them. I think it bothered them, the things that were being said about why they didn't make a deep run in October and why the season ended the way that it did and all this off the field drama. I mean, they definitely feel like they got to come in and show that they are still the young, talented team that won the World Series. Gosh, heading into the third season ago, you know? So I feel like they came in that way. Rizzo looks really good. And Chris Bryant is finally healthy. I think that seeing KB really kind of have a little attitude to him is good and refreshing. He is such a nice guy, and he always will be a nice guy. But it bothered him that people questioned his injury, questioned his where he's at. Has he fallen off? Like, you know, as he said, going down in that Twitter hole, like he read and saw and heard a lot of things that bothered him. And he came in highly motivated. I feel like the pitching staff is older, and that is where a lot of the doubters are coming from as far as how many games they might win. But as a group, they definitely said all the right things and had an edge to them that I hadn't seen in a couple of seasons. White Sox, I mean, I feel like I say this every single year, that they have the talent there to compete. Whether or not that will happen, who knows? I mean, I think they were ready for the Manny Machado drama to leave them alone. They were ready to get on with things with the group that they do have and stay focused on that. And I think that it bothered them that people on the outside kept saying, well, they need Machado. They need Machado. And yes, they definitely need more talent. They do. There's no one on the outside looking in would ever say that they don't. And even Rick Hahn says, we know we need more, and there's still moves that they'll make. But gosh, these are professional players who put in the time, and they were hearing over and over again that they're not enough and they can't do it on their own. They can't win. They can't win more games without Machado and all these things. They believe that they can. And so that was kind of their attitude and edge when we were there, for sure, how they reported to camp. And now we wait and see.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you look at the Houston Astros, they started at the bottom, they drafted, they got some high draft picks, they finally, you know, Altuve and all those guys put them into place and built a team, and we keep waiting for the White Sox to do the same thing.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And you know, I understand Chicago fans' frustration with Jerry Reinsdorf and the amount of money they have and that they weren't willing to guarantee Machado the money he was looking for, because I think he would have come. But of course, that's easy to say now on the outside looking in. I do feel like the White Sox in this moment are closer to winning, but I know that the Padres organization has more youth around him that is more promising at this point. So who knows? I get that people are frustrated that the White Sox keep saying all the right things and coming up short, like swinging and missing. And that's frustrating, But I don't know. You just have to wait and see how it all plays out and hope that these guys stay healthy and some of these young guys that have the talent that come up and deliver right away, like in Eloy Jimenez. You hope that he is everything he's cracked up to be, and that he, when he gets here, he is on a mission to help this team win now.
All right, Dion Miller, ABC TV 7, thank you very much for appearing. One last question. Are you like a lot of other Bears or people in Illinois or Bears fans that have summer cottages in Wisconsin?
No, I don't have a summer cottage anywhere.
Because a lot of those Chicago people, they love coming up where I'm from and, you know, seeing breathing the, you know, the clean air and enjoying the rural setting and a lot of trees and, you know, the good life, the wholesome pure life up there.
All those Wisconsin people, their idea of a summer home has got wheels on it and in a pickup bed.
Oh, now that's mean. See, I wasn't going to be mean-spirited about it. Beautiful country, Packer Dave. It's beautiful country. I just don't want to call it home. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Dion, thank you very much. Always a pleasure, and we will talk to you again in a few months, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
You take care. Now we bring in from Sports Byline, Sports Overnight America, which you can hear at sportsbyline.com and on Sirius XM Channel 211. He is Jeff Rich. Jeff, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Long time. Good to be here, though.
All right. Good to have you. And Jeff is on, if you're on the West Coast, that's 10 o'clock to midnight that you'll catch him. And if you're a overnight worker on the East Coast, 1 to 3, you can catch Jeff. Or if you just like to stay up at nights, you can catch
if
him
they're
there.
Dave, if they're working, I would prefer that they're not operating heavy machinery based on the calls that I get.
Yeah, but you know, it's although think about how many people nowadays are just driving along on Interstate 80 or Interstate 40, 24/7.
Truckers, right.
I've been one of those guys. I was driving across Iowa myself when I tuned into SiriusXM to check out whoever was filling in for me on the show last summer when I was doing my ballpark tour of the Midwest.
Excellent. Okay, Jeff, let's talk NBA here. Now, the Milwaukee Bucks are still atop the NBA record-wise, but they've dropped a couple games in a row, one to the Jazz and then to the Phoenix Suns on Monday night. That was an embarrassing loss. What happens when a team just wins all the time? And they had Giannis Antetokounmpo playing that game, too. That win all the time and then lose to Phoenix, even though Phoenix, with that win, that was 3 out of 4 for them at the time.
Yeah, the Suns just heated up. You know, the Suns just got hot. Forgive the pun that would be associated with that. And they're the only team in the Western Conference to sweep the Milwaukee Bucks this season. Yeah. Fortunately for Milwaukee, they're probably not going to see the Phoenix Suns in the NBA Finals.
Well, probably not. And then your impression on Milwaukee right now. We don't talk about them too much in past years, but this year they look really strong. So your impressions.
Well, I've been waiting for Milwaukee, and just to not be right about everything, I've been waiting for the Washington Wizards to turn that same corner. It looks like the Wizards are going to blow it up, and it looks like Milwaukee has finally arrived. They might need another piece, but I mean, as far as the Eastern Conference goes, Philadelphia, Boston, Toronto, and Milwaukee, I don't think gun to your head you would eliminate any one of those teams from winning the Eastern Conference this season. I'm really encouraged by what I've seen from the Bucks. It's not just the Greek Freak. It's also Middleton, and they've got a number of pieces that play cohesive basketball. It's not a me-first type of team, and I think that benefits them in the regular season. Let's see how much it'll benefit them once the playoffs begin.
Eric Bledsoe just signed a 4-year deal with Milwaukee for $70 million. So obviously they like him. Is Boston back now after a couple wins in a row?
Well, I think that they're definitely disappointed with the output that they've gotten from Gordon Hayward. Obviously, you can't really mark a guy for a devastating injury like he experienced in his first game with the Celtics back in 2017. But nobody seems really happy. I would wonder if they would just be better off getting rid of Kyrie Irving and letting Brad Stevens run the show, because this is really the first time in Brad Stevens' tenure there that something is amiss with the roster, and it definitely traces back. Even if Danny Ainge says do not blame Brad Stevens, I 100% blame Brad Stevens for not having better control of his locker room, for not having a cohesive team environment, and that will cost them when they play one of the three other good teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
And okay, take a look at the other end of the spectrum. All the teams at the bottom jockeying for position. You look at the supposed top three picks or three of the four picks. They're all going to be from Duke, Cam Reddish, R.J. Barrett, and Zion Williamson. It's like the Bulls ought to be in that mix, and they've won 6 out of their last 10. I don't know why they're not just tanking the season to get one of these three guys that's going to be an instant stud.
Well, Leventhal, the interesting thing about tanking is that it doesn't – I don't think that it extends all the way down to the coaching staff and the players on the team. And this is what happens when you get to February, March, in the early part of April with these teams that are very bad teams. John Lucas's Cavaliers team in 2003 famously tanked, and they got rid of players, and the front office can only do so much. But like a case like the Phoenix Suns, who won 3 of 4 during a stretch here last week, Igor Kokoskov, he's coaching for his job. You're hearing about Luke Walton as a replacement for him. These guys have to do enough to hang on to their jobs and saying, hey, I'm doing the best I can with what I've got, even if it's detrimental to what happens when the ping pong balls or the envelopes or however they determine the lottery happens in the middle of May.
I mean, I don't blame the players for not wanting to lose, but at some point, let's get a little strategy here. I think there's...
But there's no guarantee. I mean, the worst team has ended up with the number one overall pick how many times in the last 6 or 7 years? I think that number's actually 0.
Okay, Jeff Rich with us. You can hear him on Sports Overnight America at sportsbyline.com and on Channel 211 on Sirius XM Satellite, 10 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. Okay, Jeff, LeBron James last night passes Michael Jordan for fourth. Now he's fourth, James is, in all-time scoring. It's Kareem, Karl Malone, Kobe, and now LeBron James passing Michael Jordan. You're a Cleveland guy. He played with you last year and before that, won a championship for you in Cleveland. Now you see him in L.A. The Lakers are floundering. What are your overall thoughts here on LeBron going to L.A., what's happening in L.A., and then are you? Do you think LeBron is a better player than Michael overall? Few questions there.
All right. LeBron v. Michael, I think that that's a tough debate. I think with every comparison of players from different eras, there's a certain amount of recency bias that is valid because the game gets better. Human beings evolve. They get stronger. The strategy becomes more so. Players from LeBron's era were inspired by players from Michael's era, and there was really never a smaller player, an off guard like Michael Jordan, that got the recognition that inspired the youth. So I think that just because of right now, we have this generation of superstars inspired by the likes of Michael Jordan, that I would put him certainly above. As far as point scoring totals, I mean, do you believe that Karl Malone is a better player than Michael Jordan and LeBron James? I don't think so.
How many championships does Malone have? Oh, zero.
And he ran into Michael's Bulls. I mean, there's always something right. to look at. There's always a mitigating factor right. to look at, which makes these debates go on and on and on, and a resolution to said debate is darn near impossible just because of so many X factors. Well, if Michael Jordan had to play against a team the caliber of the Warriors, might he have a few losses in the NBA Finals? If he had to run into Timmy Robinson's Spurs with Popovich so seasoned, would Michael have run into problems taking on those Spurs teams? We don't actually know the answer to that, though. We could speculate a lot about it. As far as LeBron going to the Lakers, I mean, it doesn't feel like it was a basketball decision. And, you saw it with the underwhelming moment at Staples Center, as well as Jeff Ireland tried to sell it, to sell the excitement, sell the hype in the arena. It's an amazing accomplishment for a young person like LeBron to surpass his heroes in the most important statistic in the NBA outside of winning games and winning championships. Points scored is a big dot deal, but this is the bed that LeBron made for himself when he decided to leave a fan base that adored him to go to, first of all, a place where he's playing in the shadow of so many legends, including the recently retired Kobe Bryant. The Lakers fans were just never going to embrace him in the same way that Cleveland fans embraced him. And those big moments, they'd be so much bigger if you were playing at home for the Cavaliers when he surpassed Jordan. I mean, the game would have stopped for an hour instead of for 3 minutes for a tribute video at the Staples Center. So, I'm kind of lukewarm on the whole thing with LeBron leaving Cleveland. I don't know that they would be the best team hands down in the East like they had been for the previous 4 years. I mean, you see four teams that are probably as good as the Celtics team that took them to 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago.
Okay, Jeff, you're from Cleveland, but now you live in the Phoenix area and you have a new coach, Cliff Kingsbury, for the Cardinals, but your old coach who sat out a year and did kind of a lackluster job as an analyst, Bruce Arians, he took the job with Tampa Bay. I thought he was done, but here he is back. He's coaching in Tampa Bay. Just your thoughts on that and what you think is going to happen in Tampa Bay.
Well, if they stick with Jameis Winston, good things aren't going to happen. If they stick with, if they find a new direction to go, and it's not Fitzmagic, so I'm not really a believer in anything Tampa's doing. I think that Bruce Arians was a good head coach once upon a time, and I'm not saying the game passed it by or anything, but everything's about being in the right situation. I don't believe that he's in the right situation in Tampa. I'm kind of looking with,
abstainer's remorse as far as a Browns fan with Arians going to Tampa. Cliff Kingsbury's a big roll of the dice. All they know about Cliff Kingsbury is that he's not Steve Wilkes, who they weren't satisfied with his Wilkes. Vision of the organization. And now I've got Steve Wilkes on the other side of that as my defensive coordinator with the Browns.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Jeff, always a pleasure. We appreciate you coming on the show. Congratulations on your slot on Sirius XM Channel 211 and your show Sports Overnight America on Sports Byline at sportsbyline.com, 10 to midnight Pacific time. That is 1 to 3 Eastern time. Jeff, take care. I'm going to see you in Arizona, hopefully, at that Brewers game out there. You and I and our wives are going to go to that. And look forward to it. We will talk to you soon. And just hang on, everybody. We've got more college basketball next segment. And Adam Lucas will join us. He covers the Tar Heels in North Carolina next on the Sports Report.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, and I would like to invite you to check out Baseball Voices, the Hall of Fame series. These commemorative audio tributes celebrate the greatest baseball announcers of all time. Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Harry Callis, Marty Brenneman, Red Barber, Milo Hamilton, and Dave Niehaus. These CDs are a collection of highlights, history, humorous stories, and Hall of Fame speeches. Available now at baseballvoices.com. That's baseballvoices.com.
You're going to have to learn your cliches. You're going to have to study them. You're going to have to know them. They're your friends. Write this down. We got to play them one day at a time.
It's pretty boring.
Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down.
All right,
I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club. I know, write it down. I just want to give it my best shot, and the good Lord willing, things will work out.
Hey, Packer Day, Bill Raftery here. Let's talk a little basketball. Get away from that football. This is where the real men are.
Bill Raftery, you will see him a whole lot in the next few weeks. March Madness on its way. And to talk about that, from GoHeels.com, it's the official site of the University of North Carolina, our own Steve Leventhal talks with beat writer Adam Lucas.
Joining me now is Adam Lucas, who is with GoHeels.com, the official website of the University of North Carolina. Adam, after all these years, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steve.
So what we want to do, for those of you who've been listening a long time, know that, you know, I went to North Carolina, a huge, of course, a Tar Heel supporter. And even though I'm a broadcaster, I will, as often as possible, maintain the separation between the fan and the reporter. But this is sort of a golden opportunity, given the fact that you've got North Carolina, Duke coming up, and the fact that both schools are in the top four, to go down to Chapel Hill and talk to somebody who's there in the mix week in and week out. And so just, you know, give us a couple quick thoughts on what we're going to see this Saturday in this second matchup of the season between the two schools.
Should be a great one. Senior day for the Tar Heels and for three really important seniors, Luke May, Kenny Williams, and Cameron Johnson. Three guys who live together, and Kenny and Luke, of course, have been together for 4 years, and Cam came in last season for a transfer from Pittsburgh, but they've both, all three of them have been really important to Carolina's success this year. Luke May, of course, I guess is the headliner. He's had an unbelievable career arc, from recruit not many people knew very much about, to playing as a freshman but not doing very well, to making the big shot against Kentucky, to a great season last year, and then an even better season this year as a senior. So anytime it's senior day, it's an important day for Roy Williams. He has said before he gets more nervous on senior day than end of the day of the year. And for the opponent to be Duke in a game that's got ACC and national implications just adds to it. I would say there's more people talking just in general about this game, kind of out in the world, not just in my sort of insulated Carolina sports world, than I can remember since Tyler Hansborough was here in 08-09. So a lot of big things going on down here in Chapel Hill this week.
So what is the latest word as we record this on Thursday as to whether Zion Williamson is going to play or not play?
All we know is what Mike Krzyzewski said after their game on Tuesday, which was that he did not expect Zion to play on Saturday, but thought he'd be ready for the ACC tournament. That being said, I fully expect him to play and would be honestly a little surprised if he did not.
Yeah, certainly given the magnitude of this game, and it's just incredible how much he adds to that team. I know when Carolina played them at Cameron and he was lost in the first 30 seconds of that game, it really affected the team, but you just see such a difference when he's not in there.
Yeah, certainly quite a challenge for Duke to just muddle through with only three first-round picks on the floor. I'm sure that's got to be difficult for him. And I think they only had four McDonald's All-Americans left once Williamson went out. So that clearly was a challenge for them, and hopefully they can figure it out on Saturday.
Now, the one team that's also in the mix we haven't really discussed that certainly will play a role in the ACC tournament and in the NCAA tournament is Virginia. And, you know, they don't have an easy game either against Louisville this weekend.
Yeah, I think Virginia's probably going to win the ACC regular season. I just don't see them losing to Louisville. They've had a great year. They've got three players who are legitimate all-ACC contenders, and Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter. And, you know, the big question with them is going to come once the NCAA tournament starts, and they're going to have to hear about UMBC pretty much every hour on the hour until they go out and win a game. But they're one of the best teams in the country easily, and I would expect them to hang around quite some time into March.
Now, the number one team in the country, and we won't really go into depth on this, is Gonzaga, who are running away out west. But how would they fare if, let's say, they were playing in the ACC? Wouldn't quite be the cakewalk that they have now out west.
No, it wouldn't be anywhere close to that. But we do know that they beat Duke on a neutral floor out in Hawaii. They lost to Carolina at the Smith Center, but it was a good game. So I think if they were in the ACC, you'd see them, they'd be in that top tier with Carolina and Duke and Virginia, and then you throw Gonzaga in there. I think that would be your top four in some form or fashion. They'd be a little more tested by the time they got to March, but I think they're plenty good enough to be competitive and the best league in the country.
All right, so let's go back and talk a little bit more about the Tar Heels. And yeah, you talked about Cam Johnson, what a great season he's having. And I mean, just watching his progression, even just in the short time that he's been there, he has become an incredible, deadly shooter from outside.
When Cam got here from Pitt, he mostly was just a standstill three-point shooter, and that was the scouting report on him, and that's how teams defended him. He was just a shooter. He had some off-season surgery that loosened up his hip a little bit. It had been, according to him, it had been giving him some problems for more than a year. And you can just see that he looks more athletic. He's a little freer moving, and it's enabled him to do some things with the ball this year that he wasn't able to do in years past. He's been able to score off the dribble. He's showed a little bit of a mid-range game. And he's just had a great, great season. He also rebounded a lot more. He had a double-double the last time out at Boston College on Tuesday. And rebounding is something Coach Williams gets on him quite a bit about, so he always loves it when he does well in that category. And I got to be honest, if Zion Williamson doesn't play on Saturday night, that means he will have missed a third of Duke's ACC games. I think at that point, you've got to start considering the idea that Cam Johnson's going to get some ACC Player of the Year votes, because it's just hard to vote for a guy who missed a third of his team's games, and Cam's had a great season. So especially if he does it again against Duke on Saturday, I think that'll win him some votes.
Now, talking about postseason honors or possible postseason honors, what about Coby White? Just talk about how his progression has been coming on his first season and how he's matured and grown as a player from zero to where he is now.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great scorer, probably one of the best, if not the best, freshman guard scorers that Roy Williams has had here at Carolina. A little bit taller than you're used to for a point guard at 6'4", 6'5". So he's able to get that shot off against pretty much anybody who's guarding him, who's a normal guard size. There's still some progress to be made with some of his decision-making and just some of the pure point guard-type things. But when you're putting up 30 points on a semi-regular basis, you can afford to make some of those turnovers. And the key for him and the reason he fits so well with Coach Williams' system is that he plays as fast as anyone who has played point guard for Carolina, and that includes Ty Lawson. And he's able to get the Tar Heels up and down the floor, and they're getting to where they can score off of made baskets by the opponent. And when that starts happening, that's when you know Carolina's really playing at the tempo Roy Williams wants.
Right. Well, and that's what you always hear all the announcers talking about, how, boy, if you miss your shot, you better get back on defense fast, because just the way Carolina moves the ball up court, gets into position, and, you know, and they were talking about the statistics and you know, offensively, all these numbers, and then defensively, and I was explaining to somebody, I said, it doesn't matter how they are defensively. They score so many points. It doesn't matter how many points they give up. I mean, what did they give up to NC State? 90 points, and they still won the game?
Yeah, and I think Carolina has made some progress defensively since earlier in the year when they were not very good in that department. Couldn't stop the dribble. The rotations were bad. They just weren't very good at all on defense. They've made quite a bit of progress, and it'll be interesting to see if they can get up to the level Coach Williams expects of them defensively. But, and you know, as you said, if you can score like they can, that's nice. But at some point, you're going to have to play the upper echelon teams in March, like the Virginias and the Dukes, and you're going to have to be able to get some stops. You can't just outscore teams like that.
Well, how do you defend against Virginia?
Very slowly. I think you have to be completely committed to every single principle you have for the full 30 seconds, and then you have to rebound the ball. You can't afford to give them second shots, because it's so demoralizing to play defense for 30 seconds and then, all right, they missed. Oh, no, they got the rebound. I got to do this for another 30 seconds. That can really take a lot out of you. So you've got to be committed to that. Ty Jerome's really good. I think he doesn't get enough attention, and Kyle Guy can really shoot it. So I think they're interesting this year because depth-wise, they're not as good as last year, I don't think, beyond those first three. They're not as good as they were last year, but those first three are really, really good and could play for anybody.
Okay, so the one player we really haven't addressed in terms of, you know, what you're seeing now, you know, where he's at, is Nasir Little, who, of course, there was so much talk before about why is he not playing, and now he certainly, when he comes in, he's very explosive. But the one thing I've noticed, when he gets in the lane, it gets a little crowded in there, and he, you know, if he tries to do that in the NBA, it's going to be quite a different story than getting in there in the muck with college players.
Yeah, I know less about what his potential NBA role would be, and we'll figure that out when the time comes. But as far as in college, I think the thing he gives Carolina is an option that almost no other team has, and that's that type of athleticism and driving ability off the bench. Other teams just don't have that. You don't bring that off the bench and have the opportunity to create points the way he does. When he rebounds hard, he's really tough to deal with because he can also generate some offense on second shots. He gets to the free throw line more on a per minute basis than anybody else on the team in ACC play because he is so aggressive. When he's just standing around shooting three pointers, he's just another guy. But when he's aggressively taking the ball to the basket, he's somebody who opponents have a really hard time dealing with.
Yeah, one of my colleagues does some scouting for the NBA, and the first thing, of course, he said was, well, I said, well, why is he the NBA prospect and not some of the other guys? And he says his explosiveness and his quickness. And when he gets out there in space, if he's being guarded by a taller guy, he can blow by him. If he's getting guarded by a shorter player, he can literally just post him up.
That's right. He's got a lot of options that he can take. And when he arrived at college, he told everybody he was really proud of his jump shooting, and he feels like he's a better shooter than he gets credit for. But I think he's slowly starting to realize, although we're all suitably impressed by that, we believe him, it's more beneficial for him at the college level at this point in time to aggressively go to the basket, jump over some people, get fouled, go to the free throw line, put the ball in the basket, and we'll worry about the jump shooting later.
Yeah, no, and if you think about one of the things that's really benefited North Carolina this year is their free throw shooting, where in the past they used to miss way too many shots, and there have been several games where they were just ungodly from the free throw line.
Yeah, Carolina, and this helps them offensively, of course, too. They're capable of putting five on the floor who are all very capable of scoring at any time, and five quality shooters. And that definitely helps you at the end of games like the road game at Clemson this past weekend. You don't just have to get the ball to one key guy when you're up by two and you know the other team's fouling. You've got some options. You can get them to two or three. Kenny Williams knocked down three of four big free throws in the final seconds last Saturday, and he's probably not your one, two, or three option in that scenario. Luke May shooting free throws a ton better this year. That was a liability for him last season, but he's worked on it a bunch and has gotten a lot better. So Carolina is good at the line, and a lot of times that makes a difference in the postseason.
And we're talking with Adam Lucas from GoHeels.com. And I got to tell you, just as a side note, one of my friends posted on Facebook, I guess he had watched on ESPN, the 1987 ACC semifinal between Virginia and North Carolina. And it sort of intrigued me. And, of course, it was on YouTube. So I went back and watched some of it. It's so interesting to watch a game that even, you know, I guess that's 30 years ago, there was no high screen and roll. All the action was inside. There was none of this kick it out. You didn't really see a lot of shooting from beyond the arc as you do now. It's just amazing how the game has changed, even, you know, in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite games of all time. I was at that game. It was at the Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland, and I think it was a double overtime win for Carolina over Virginia. And Kenny Smith had a great game. He was one of my favorite players when I was a kid. And that was one of the best Carolina teams ever that did not win the national title. They were 14-0 in the ACC, lost in the regional final to Ronnie Cicely and Syracuse. And Coach Smith did a great job with that team. As you mentioned, it was a very different kind of game then. The Tar Heels had a couple different big guys, and you would actually throw the ball into the post, and then they would execute a post move, which is something that you don't often see these days. So a very different time, but, man, that was a fun time, too, to be a Carolina basketball fan.
Joe Wolf, Dave Popson, a freshman named Scott Williams, J.R. Reed was on that team. That was a lot of talent. And I remember I met some of those guys because I was still in Chapel Hill in those days. And, that was such an interesting time. So, with the short time we have left, I know you've written some books. So let me give you an opportunity to plug what you've written and how people can get a hold of your stuff and how people can read your material.
Well, the most fun thing we always do is anytime Carolina gets to win a national championship, we get to write a book about it. So that's still on the table for this year, and who knows, maybe it'll happen. The most recent one we did was in 2017, and it was called Redemption. That was a lot of fun because, of course, Carolina lost in 16, won it in 17. I wrote the official book of the first 100 years of the Carolina basketball program. That was called A Century of Excellence. And folks up your way probably be interested to know the one I'm working on right now is about Michael Jordan's 3 years at Carolina from 82 to 84. Having a lot of fun talking to a lot of players from that era about that. Going to be about another year before it's out, but it's been a lot of fun to do so far.
Great. Well, my guest has been Adam Lucas, GoHeels.com, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Adam Lucas, GoHeels.com with Steve Leventhal. And we want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can hear new shows monthly online, and you go to internetfm.com. That's where you get it, and kwwradio.com. Glad to have you with us. We want to thank Adam Lucas. We want to thank Jeff Rich from Sports Byline USA Network. We want to thank Dion Miller from ABC TV 7, Steve Leventhal in Chicago. I'm Packer Dave. Have a great week. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye.
Get some bears, scumbag!
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now, you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.